Hello, my name is Chris Thurston, and I'm joined by Rebecca Thurston.
Hi, that's me.
For, I guess, the last in the foreseeable future of Thurston siblings talk about a Star Wars film that they've just seen.
I know, this is our third of these, but we did them for Last Jedi and for Solo before, in different circumstances, which I think you want to say a bit about.
Yeah, right. So actually, one thing at the top of this is going to be, it wasn't clear from the title of the thing you just clicked on, a discussion about Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker. Spoilers a go-go. We're going to talk about the movie in its entirety and what we thought about it. So if you haven't seen it and you are avoiding spoilers, now is the time to simply stop this.
Stop all of this.
Just stop it.
Just stop.
Just stop it. The other note, which you just gestured at, Becky, is that we genuinely debated whether or not we were going to record this. Previously for both Solo and The Last Jedi, there was a sort of big bubbling desire to kind of spill thoughts on those films in their entirety over the span of a couple of hours. This is very likely to be a much shorter discussion because, and I feel like we should unburden ourselves at this straight away, film isn't very good.
The film's not very good, yeah.
Film's just not very good. And there are some things that are interesting about that, and there are some things to take away from it. And I want to talk about our experience of it, but really the feeling that we're experiencing right now is the desire to put a coda on the discussions that we have had about what it means for this franchise to come back and for it to be explored in lots of different ways and for it to arrive at this point to land on its face.
Yeah, exactly. Like with we never planned to do a podcast about The Last Jedi. And as we talked about when we did that one, the little biographical thing, but like for us in that period of time, I was living across the ocean and I would come back on planes to watch a Star Wars with my brother. And it was a big thing. And we left The Last Jedi with so many feelings about that film that no plan to do a podcast. And I was literally at the train station about to leave, turned into, let's record this because we have lots of thoughts. And then we talked for 4 million years. Mm. And with Solo, it was just like fun. It was like, let's do this. This is a coda to like our last few years of the weird, like our sibling thing of let's make sure we see a Star Wars together. Mm. And so I guess this is as much as this will be about, no, this will primarily be about what we thought this film was and how it made us feel. But it's sort of just like a little cap on what has been like an interesting 5 years of us engaging with the space movies.
Right. And I think there's a lot of people in that situation.
Yeah.
To some extent. So hopefully there's some emotional catharsis in what people are going through. There's a lot of reviews out there and there's certainly an awful lot of takes.
Yeah.
And I found myself agreeing with a lot of the critics. So there's plenty of good criticism people could go and read. It's not to say that we wouldn't necessarily benefit from also discussing the film. But yeah, I think we should start with just talking through our experience of the film. Becky, do you want to go first? Like, how did you experience this movie? What was the feeling going in, coming out, and in the middle? Indeed, the span of it.
The span of the film. I will take that question and expand it even further by saying, as we went to see it, we said to each other, don't know how this is going to be, but have a nice time.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been worried that like I would hate it. I had been worried that like I'd have a bad time and it would be disappointing, or we'd have a stressful time. What was weird about the experience of watching this film is I think it was properly not good, like a properly not good film in a lot of ways. But I wasn't sad, and that really surprised me. And it's kind of damning in its own way. I think I said that quite quick afterwards. But something I felt really keenly while I was watching it was if Colin Trevorrow. Was the named director of this film, was the person I knew was at the helm, I would have been bitting blood, I think was the phrase I used. I would have been furious because there were so many choices that I found just absolutely indefensible or just kind of like shallow or silly or whatever. And if it had been someone else who had stepped into this and made this film, I would have been fucking furious. And I, pardon the swearing. And I also would have been really worried for you. Like, I would have been worried for your experience. I would have been stressed about it. There was a very odd experience of watching this movie of consistently feeling like, oh, that's not very good, or oh, that's not very well done, or oh, God. But just kind of leaving it, being like, okay. Which was, I think one of the reasons we're able to have this in quite a relaxed way right now is we both had a similar feeling of like, okay, that wasn't very good. And it really surprised me that I didn't leave it like angry. I was like, okay, that wasn't very good. I think some of that is to do with it being, with knowing it's, you know, we'll get into kind of the J.J. Abrams of it all, but like knowing it was his film, this is what he wanted to do. And it's like, okay, that's what you wanted. Fine.
I was going to ask, you know, maybe you just gestured at it, but I was going to ask, why is it different that that it was J.J. Abrams' film with these mistakes.
Yeah. Well, I think for me it's because it felt like there was such a lack of... I mean, the obvious elephant in the room is just such a lack of interest in what was, you know, for a lot of people special about The Last Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's a divisive film, but I, especially on rewatching it recently, I still really respect the filmmaking choices around Johnson Maine's, the thematic choices and the character choices. I know that for a lot of people, those things aren't positive, but I loved all of those things. And it's so from the get-go confident that the audience will be fine with going from where it left the characters to what them to the kind of lack of motivation. But you can go from, you know, Kylo Ren's arc in The Last Jedi to it being entirely like to just going straight back into the old way. I mean, I think the kind of goofy joke I made when I left was The Last Jedi gave us, you know, we are what we grow beyond. And this whole film was we, this entire dancing show of we, the old, or, you know, like that's like the only important part of that sentence. Whether it's on the level of the dialogue being clunky, whether it's on the level of, sure, the gang are together, but what's Poe really doing and why? All of those, the just sort of structural issues with the film, the fact that it is just, you know, I feel like with The Force Awakens, you get away a bit more with a MacGuffin hunt and a pursuit after pursuit because you have the kind of capacity to imagine that, like, okay, we're launching into this world to set up to something. And that gives you a bit of grace because it allows you to imagine that, like, I'm going to see where this world is going. I'm going to get back into it. My engagement with the past kind of makes sense in the plot of that film, and it's going to set something up and it opens these doors. You can't just keep that just a chasing a thing to a thing to a thing is not enough. It's not an interesting story. And so the combination of what seems to be such active rejections of things that, you know, the obvious stuff being like the Rey is nobody, the obvious stuff being let's move beyond Jedi and Sith in terms of how we understand the Force and try, let's stop being critical about what war looks like. Again, not in the most sophisticated way in the world, but there's a bit of a critique of they blow up, you up, we blow them up, who's making money, whatever. All of those things, which I did find interesting and like stimulating and like generative about The Last Jedi, were so solidly closed off. That had it been a new director coming in, I would have felt like, oh, this person doesn't care about these characters. He doesn't care about building this story. He doesn't care about continuing this story. He doesn't care about creating a consistent trilogy. He didn't understand. He didn't care about connecting to like, okay, so what is the story of this trilogy of films? If it was a new director, he'd be like, how? That's so fucking rude. Because it was JJ and he started this, I think it felt like it was... If The Force Awakens kind of has a lot of goodwill to do with a kind of well-intentioned and kind of justifiable nostalgia for the past of the franchise, that feeling of kind of a nostalgia for The Force Awakens and a nostalgia for that possibility is kind of like a weird closed loop. And so because it was JJ, I can't say to that, like, God, this person came in out of nowhere and pissed everything away. Because he was, you know, he was the opening door pisser. I'm just kind of like, okay. That is, by the way, that was the bingo things we ever had, opening door pisser. You know, it just felt like, oh, okay, that's what they were to you. And not in a mean way. And something we struggled with when we were talking about our feelings about the film was a lot of things you want to say sound quite damning. And that doesn't affect my experience of it. I genuinely wasn't like shaking with rage. I just wasn't interested. And it did quickly slip into that part of my brain, which I'm sure this was a well-known place for a lot of people who hated The Last Jedi, of like, okay, well, this isn't telling a story that interests me, so I'm going to switch off from thinking it means anything.
I think there's a lot of different sides to that, a lot to unpack there. I think it might be helpful to boil down the film to, I think, what its core failings are.
Yeah.
Because hopefully everyone's listening to this has seen it, but it's a bizarre movie. I think you're absolutely right that it is redeemed by the fact that, like, one person deliberately did this.
Yeah.
Which is, interestingly, something I've only ever felt previously about the prequels. Which is like, well, George Lucas did this on purpose, so it's got that going for it, at least.
Yeah.
I agree with you that if it felt like someone had come in and ruined it, then that would have been a different feeling. It is obviously a enormous narrative break. It's a bizarre example of a trilogy. It's not really a trilogy, this series of films. It's two films that follow on from each other and a third film that ends a different story with some of the same pieces. Like a few plot mechanics and themes carried forward. The sort of the hard left turn into Palpatine, which has obviously been forecast a great deal. That's, you know, a failing in that it forces you out of the story you were following and into a different story where people are chasing different things.
Yeah.
Despite that, its addiction to, I think, MacGuffin chasing,
yeah.
which is not a continual part of Star Wars. You know, with Force Awakens did it, people said, you know, BB-8 is the droid in this one, R2 and the plans for the droid in the first one. But actually, that doesn't quite map the same way. And it does to an extent, but like it's one parallel among many.
Yeah.
This is addicted to MacGuffin chasing, and those MacGuffins don't really make any sense. Yeah. It's all over the place. There's that. I think the more I think about it, I think the structure and the cadence of the action is very un-Star Wars-like. Actually, it's very, very fast, and it doesn't pause much, and very rarely does it give characters a chance to do anything other than deliver a quip.
Yeah.
And some of the banter is okay, but I feel like...
You've got some very charismatic actors.
Disney slash MCU slash blockbuster stuff is quite good at this now.
Yeah.
Like, the sort of slightly, like, you know, friends around a D&D table banter thing.
Yeah.
It's fine, but the big thing that the movie... doesn't have, which The Force Awakens has, and you know, even the new ones, even in that context, JJ's other film, is moments where you kind of sit in the moment and take in the universe. There's a handful. You can argue the start of like the festival sequence maybe has a little bit of this, but all of the Star Wars films have moments where characters spend a little bit of time talking about what they're going through, or on there's time on the Falcon discussing what's going on with them. This film is long and so pacey that I think something about it feels fundamentally un-Star Wars-like to me. You know,
Flight speed skipping.
Yeah. I mean, actually Marsh, I think, put in our private chat whether or not that was actually a self-referential comment on JJ's part. Like, you can't just light speed skip the Falcon until it catches fire. That's what this film does.
Yeah.
Like, you can't really attach to anything because things are so quick and they're so disconnected. And the action is, I think, so poorly directed a lot of the time. The lightsaber fights are extremely similar, but there is one every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
The sort of axiomatic kind of crime, I think, is the, did Chewbacca die or didn't he sequence, which involves a whole bunch of characters stood in a desert plane with a hill, unable to tell how many shuttles there are.
Going up.
getting ambushed by enemies that should be in plain sight. Like, as cinema, it doesn't make any sense. There's no visual logic from one step to another, which I know people had problems with The Last Jedi's plot logic in some cases, or technological logic, but it was almost always in service of character.
Yeah.
Whereas this was in service of a character moment that was then undone.
Yeah.
You know, even that moment, not to, I appreciate we don't want to talk for ages, but even just to unpick that.
Yeah.
Like, there's a kind of gymnastics the film does where it sets up this very strange action sequence made up of individually visually striking images with no real connection.
Yeah.
So you have Finn and Poe and Chewie trying to get this old ship working, which is on a little bluff, a little rocky bluff, in a desert.
Yeah.
With obviously clear lines of sight all around.
Yeah.
I know that you're just trying to think about putting yourself in the character's shoes for a moment. The Knights of Ren and some First Order stormtroopers land nearby.
Yeah.
But they don't get seen somehow. Chewie wanders outside and just gets captured from one shot to another. Yeah. Like, no, you know, Chewie, a physically imposing character who has never been captured in the films, I think, beyond the old Wookiee handcuff switcheroo.
Yeah.
Is suddenly in handcuffs. Okay, fuck, we're doing that then.
Yeah.
Rey, meanwhile, is doing a backflip over a TIE fighter, which she annihilates and blows up, and then Kylo Ren steps out.
And I did find that like the most like compelling moment of the film, just that little breathing space before that happens.
Right.
Which is so rare.
But it's undermined by its proximity to why is no one else seeing this? Yeah. It's sort of like this strange sort of like slideshow effect. And then she's trying to pull the shuttle with Chewie on it down, which makes sense. It's an exciting moment. Kylo Ren tries to stop her.
Yeah.
She's pushed over the edge and she releases Force Lightning, which we can get to.
Yeah.
Blows up the shuttle. And at that moment, I was through this shock of like, I can't fucking hell. Have they just done this? Have they just killed Chewie in this way? Okay.
Yeah.
Weird. It doesn't feel quite right, but okay. And for that to then slide into, actually, sir, there's two shuttles and the other one had a prisoner I think you'll like.
Yeah.
Which is the classic JJ thing of like, never say anyone's name.
Yeah.
Say like, you're not going to believe who's in here.
Yeah.
And then either cut away immediately or show you briefly and then cut away.
Yeah.
Like, who are you, cut, is the JJ Abrams like school of mystery storytelling. It's such a bizarre piece of filmmaking.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't flow. And they've, you know, Star Wars movies over the years have different relationships with how much to show and how much not to show and so on. But this just felt incompetent, like just fundamentally, like not, you know, I appreciate I got into this in our Last Jedi chat, and afterwards I came away regretting that slightly, that I got a bit too into the pedantry of the logic of the space battles and things, because I'm vulnerable to that as a big nerd, but I don't think it's the most important thing to a film.
No.
However, I do think if you're making an action adventure film, you have to be able to follow the physical logic yeah. of what is happening to yeah. characters in space.
And yeah.
Not in spaceships. I mean, literally in physical space.
Yeah. You need limitations, and you need, because yeah. that's part of it making, as you say, kind of physical sense mm. and it being legible. And it's also part of it having stakes.
Right. Well, exactly. And so the film, which is overstuffed with stuff as it is and overstuffed with exposition, ends up bending over backwards in that moment and in several others, extending itself in the process to undo a decision that it's made.
Yeah.
Even if killing Chewbacca in that moment would piss everybody off.
Yeah.
It would be a big character beat for Rey.
Yeah.
It would give you something for the rest of the movie, something for other characters to work yeah. with. But it won't commit that far. Everything yeah. that happens gets undone. C-3PO sacrifices yeah. himself, but don't
doesn't
worry.
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
And you know it doesn't matter from the beginning because you just, like, it's, yeah.
Right. And then so I'm trying to pull this back to, like, why I had this experience. So I went in, as I always am, a little bit nervous, and then it started and it was so pacey and it was all over the fucking place, honestly. Yeah. And Palpatine's back, and that's never going to be explained. And,
yeah.
you know, and you can, and they throw away Snoke in the opening sequence, and,
yeah.
you know, all of the rest of this stuff. And then about half an hour in, I realized, oh, this is just bad.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then I relaxed.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, you know, there's some disappointment.
Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of how I feel when, like, a vote doesn't go your way. I appreciate we've just had that in this country, but it's been the case the last couple of years. That moment of, oh, fuck, it's just this.
Yeah.
You know, like, this has just happened. Fine. You only move forward from this point. I'm not yeah. undoing this,
yeah.
you know. And I think also one thing to put aside that, I think this is interesting. Disney, in both the Marvel properties and Star Wars over the last couple of years, have been pretty good at controlling what goes in a trailer, yeah. fake shots, that kind yeah. of thing. This was a bit of a weird one. The trailer for Rise of Skywalker really did give away
yeah.
quite a lot of the film.
Yeah.
And that, again, you know, the I amazed myself by being completely unmoved by a yeah. moment where all of the spaceships yeah. in the galaxy exited hyperspace.
Yeah.
We had
not between us no X-Wing related chills in a Star Wars movie.
Right. And that is bizarre if you know me particularly. But part of that was because, oh, I knew this was happening because that shot was in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's strange. Like, I feel like, and it all, maybe in some cases, you know, to talk about, it's just, J.J. Abrams, as a filmmaker, feels so disinterested in... I don't know what it is. I think maybe it's an aesthetic choice
mm-hmm.
that he shouldn't have to explain why action is a certain way
yeah.
or why things happen a certain way. But what a strange movie. It's caught in this double bind between these retcons and these little bits of exposition that go back and fill in all the detail that certain parts of the fan base felt were missing
mm-hmm.
from The Last Jedi specifically. Mm-hmm. While at the same time creating a billion new problems.
Yeah.
You know, it has a throwaway line to kind of try and assuage people who are annoyed by the hyperdrive
yeah.
attack, the Holdo maneuver
yeah.
in Last Jedi. And yet they drop this pointless 16-hour countdown at the beginning. What
yeah.
does that mean
yeah,
in Star Wars?
Exactly.
Star Wars has never really dealt in fixed spans of time.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I appreciate The Last Jedi does, which is actually, I think, one of Last Jedi's weaker elements,
yeah.
is it's hard to tell how long anything takes.
Mm.
The Empire Strikes Back has this issue as well, actually. And so a 16-hour limit, but that gets sort of forgotten, thrown away. But
by except that people are constantly reiterating, this is the most important mission, everything hinges on this.
Right,
like, people are constantly telling you that rather than...
showing you.
Yeah, yeah.
And it creates these moments where, like, of course, you know, Han and Chewie are going to come back in the Falcon with the whole galaxy behind them.
Yeah.
But that is such a suspension of disbelief because it requires so much. Like, how the hell does that work?
And I think that's the thing, is that there's a misapplied logic of where, what kind of explanation is satisfying
mm.
and what kind of explanation, like, because I think there's a muddled logic where, for example, you get a lot of very clumsily written scenes where people explain, oh, this is exactly what happened. Let me explain to you. Like, Kylo Ren will say to, you know, Rey her past. The Palpatine will do the same thing. Like, there was a lot of, like, let's make sure we give them the words for this. Let's make sure we explain, like...
You are a dyad.
The dyad, all that stuff. So, like, there's this, like, hangover-seeming desire to give receipts for why things work
mm.
without any interest in a narrative or thematic kind of cause and effect or character-based
yeah.
reasons. And I think that even translates to sort of... plot mechanics, in terms of, it seems to me like a film where J.J. Abrams had like a sense of, like, I want to do, I want to show this, and these connections between these things are plausible.
Mm.
Like, it's plausible that following this thing leads to this, it's plausible that following this thing leads to this, without any desire to have it be, you know, you mentioned, for example, like, you said something like, you know, Palpatine's there, is back for some reason, it's not explained. And that's not a, for me, it's not explained of the ilk of, you know, why haven't they given me a, you know, why haven't they given me the receipts and told me exactly how this worked? It's not that, it's not like a technical pedantry. It's a, you have an antagonist you don't understand. You've had a lot of wasted narrative space about the central antagonist. You know, I'm not saying that all stories have to fundamentally break down into this, like, what is this person's motivation and what do they represent and yada, yada, yada. But there's no story. There's, you know, and in The Last Jedi, for, I know people, again, for all the opinions available on it, the actual, like, conflicts and things that are happening are all different and all informed by character. And nothing here really is beyond. And I think the impression I get from this film is that J.J. Abrams felt confident that the two things he'll keep hitting, like, the things to hit at home are culmination. So biggest mission, everything comes up to this, everything comes up to this. All of the Jedi are in me. This is the I'm every woman. Everything has led to this. So keep saying that. Keep saying that. So it's about inheritance. It's about culmination. Fine. That's the one thing. The other thing is, again, like, this could be resonant in different telling, but, you know, they win when they think you're alone, when you don't see that you're with other people. And his way of following that through is, here's all the friends. And the third one being like, it's about your friends. And, like, fine. Those are, like, perfectly, those are some of those, they're simple and they're not very ambitious, but they're, like, kind of fine, like, story points. But his conviction that that's all you need is say that and then have a nice time along the way is enough. It's just, it's, you can be so much more interesting than that. You can have so many more textures. And so, for example, it means that if you've hammered home that, okay, the theme is, you know, we're not alone. They win when they think we're alone. We show that by all the gang turns up. Okay, fine. But, like, you haven't established any stakes for, like, why the gangs could never all the time turn up all the time before. Mm-hmm. You don't know, like,
who they are,
how it works. And this isn't, I don't think this is pedantry in terms of, like, well, I don't know how that person got here. It's to do with, okay, if you're teaching me a lesson about the importance of like, they actually, at least in some, again, not to just endlessly put praise on Last Jedi, but they got into the idea of how images work and how, what the meaning of, like, a hero is and what it means to look at that. To give you a sense of what it might mean for a small band of people to be the spark that lights the yada, blah, blah. This is just say it's good and they'll turn up. Yeah. And it doesn't, and you don't have to worry about the stakes of the battle or how it works because it doesn't matter. And you'll have a nice time along the way. And it's just so unambitious. You can do, you don't, and not every, like, this is a particularly me hang up, but I, you know, I'm not like, it's not, not all MacGuffins are bad, but you can't have every MacGuffin be like, oh, they set up this to sting to this and they ascribe this dagger with the Sith language to point to this tool that, because it's not interesting. Like, why set up a series of linking things? You know, at least, you know, there's a you've got to find Luke MacGuffin in Force Awakens. And that honestly could be more interesting because you can, again, I'm not a talented writer, but there are ways to tell, okay, conflict, we don't know where this person is, how to find them. There was a whole genre of stories about that where people like talk to people and learn things rather than just finding a mystical thing in a thing. Not everything, like, I think J.J. Abrams has the sense of like, this will lead to this, this will lead to this, but no playfulness in terms of how that will work. Whereas again, in something like The Last Jedi, we've got like, Rey will learn this through experience and through learning from Luke. Luke will learn this through his experience. We have, like, what Poe, like, experienced, like, let's take the hotshot pilot and put him in a plot about what it means to not be able to do that. None of this stuff is, like, hugely revolutionary, but it's just more compelling character stuff. And so just to have the gang all want to win, the gang will go to this place, and this place, and they will constantly, and they will say the words that explain, like, tell you, like, so you can go, you can point to the proof of, like, oh, well, actually, this is why Rey has this power, and I have died, and but, like, it's just not interesting. And I think, and again, I'm sounding incensed, which isn't my experience. My experience is just like, okay, they're not interested in telling a cool story here.
Yeah.
Which is a problem because I think you get away with it in Force Awakens because it was opening a door. It was saying,
it was also introducing a new audience as well. Which,
but, like, what was, you know, like, we haven't got to some specific things that I think really don't work. Like, I do think, as much as a lot of this stuff was just, like, disappointing, I do think it's really bad how they treated Rose.
Absolutely.
I think, like, things like that where, like, you know, because it's one thing to talk about a lack of investment in, like, The Last Jedi's thematic ideas, which is just really disappointing and, you know, loses all these opportunities, you know, to show a lack of interest in, like, where it brought characters and how it changed characters. That's all, like, a shame, and it just makes the movie not interesting. But it's really fucking bad after everything Kelly Tran went through to be like, oh, no one really cares. And it's just, and then there's the stuff, there's other just like kind of on the surface stuff that didn't work. And it's one that I think I kind of snapped into feeling like, oh, this isn't working quite soon. It was like, it's a shame, but the Leia stuff.
I was going to mention that in a slightly different context, but yeah, it doesn't work.
And like it's, and it does that same, and it, one reason I think it, for me, it's related to the broader problems of the film is when you're watching the Leia stuff, you're watching literally kind of like the ghosts of a conversation, and your brain kind of goes to figuring out like, okay, well, what kind of dialogue would this have been? Because it doesn't really make sense for BB-8 to be like, I will help. And then for her to be like, you know, never underestimate a droid. All that, none of that stuff really makes any sense. Like, oh, it doesn't tell you anything interesting in the plot. So you suddenly find yourself imagining what Force Awakens scene that would be. The reason I mention this is because that is, it's all responsive. And obviously in this instance, it's responding to the tragedy of Carrie Fisher's death. But it is just, these are our things, we can slot them together, which is just a broader problem of the whole shebang, is we can just slot these things together.
Right.
And people will enjoy it.
I would spin that out into, I think, what my immediate takeaway was, and it's related to some experiences I've had recently. The last couple of weeks, or last week even, I've rewatched the original trilogy with despecialized editions, which are like fan remasters that take advantage of some of the subsequent remastering of those movies, but without any of the subsequent special edition add-ons.
And,
tweaks and changes and McClunkies that have been visited upon them on the way. And I've seen those films a billion times, right? I love these movies. And I had this strange experience of I hadn't seen those versions since I was a kid. And seeing those despecialized versions, suddenly I was a kid again. And the train of thought, and I appreciate that I'm repeating myself in some of the conversation we've had, but I think it's really important to Rise of Skywalker. I've been thinking about this before I went into the film. Star Wars has a very difficult relationship with its own sort of meta-textual layer of what happens subsequently.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of different aspects of this. You know, Lucas famously is a far more comfortable editor than a director. He doesn't want to direct actors in the moment or usher them around or try and get good performances out of them. And appears to have no interest in the dynamic of two actors kind of sparking off a particular moment. Yeah. If he can take two different shots of the same scene and splice one actor in from one and one from the other and create these kind of hybrid things, he absolutely does. I mean, he did that throughout the prequels.
Yeah.
His only, you know, technology, I think, for Lucas, it partly was a way of not having to be an in-the-moment director.
Yeah.
Being able to just gather up a massive amount of material and fix it in post.
Yeah.
So definition of the fix-it-in-post director, which for me is loses something of cinema. Yeah. Loses something of performance, the way actors spark off each other.
Yeah.
And the same is true in the special editions
for
the movies. As soon as you see those, I think, well, the way I would put it is I think in the prequels, you get this very stilted vibe from those films. Actors don't really seem to be relating to each other. Doesn't help that the dialogue is very shonky and they look weird.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, you get, it's they're not films that have very many moments of humanity in them.
Mm-hmm.
They're big and operatic and obviously grand follies and one person's vision. And that's what gives them some coherence, which I can get to. But broadly speaking, the actors don't really relate to each other. And then in the original trilogy, when you have these other bolt-ons, they constantly take you out of the film.
Yeah.
They remind you, oh, someone's added some CGI here, or this scene was changed 300 times, or these actors have been rearranged, or Han clearly isn't speaking to CGI Jabba the Hutt, and he's just sort of teleported up and down again so that we can make this scene work. All of these sort of janky bolt-ons that are unnecessary. Rewatching them is the experience of seeing what it was like when those actors were in the room with one another, with obviously some post-rotoscoping and stuff, but just, you know, the moments again. And since then, we've had a couple of years of Star Wars films where the actors have actually sort of sparked off each other a little bit. And Rey never met Poe, but there was chemistry between John Boyega and Oscar Isaac, and there's chemistry between Daisy Ridley and John Boyega.
Yeah.
Everyone has chemistry with John Boyega, basically. Yeah. And that was, you know, good in, or fine in The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
It was good in The Last Jedi for a long part. I thought it was very good in both Rogue One and Solo. Actually, both those movies have space for actors to be in the space with their actors and kind of chew the fat and kind of enjoy themselves. And, you know, whether that's Paul Bettany sat on a couch hamming the hell out of those sequences, the Dragon Voss sequences in Solo, or it's, I think the physical relationship between Cassian and Jin in Rogue One is great, tracing that between that across that course of that film and how it mimics their antagonistic and close relationship that never gets a chance to resolve and ends in a hug. Like, these are moments of intelligent storytelling through having physical people performing. Yeah. And then Rise of Skywalker drops the ball completely, partly because it's too fast and too kind of manic to allow actors to kind of settle into any given moment or have any kind of relationship with each other, really, I felt, with maybe one exception. But it also, it is clearly a response to the meta elements of Star Wars, both here is my response to the questions of The Last Jedi. Here is this mystery box being, you know, and the unsatisfying nature of, but you didn't see this coming and you totally did.
Yeah.
And as you say, the fact that everything needs to be explained three times, you know, Rey's parentage is teased too many times in that film.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as she just Force Lightning, you know who she is.
Yeah.
And then there's three or four other scenes after that where it's like, I'm not going to tell you yet.
Of course,
you know. And it's frustrating. And it's frustrating because I can't be in the moment when the film is about the film.
Yeah.
Like, I would like to be in that world with those characters.
Yeah.
But I'm not really. I'm watching sort of sped up. I said afterwards, because I went with my friends who I do Star Wars role playing with, but I said it felt like I had been given one session to end our campaign.
Just go.
Just do it. And the previous thing this year I felt this way about was Game of Thrones, actually, which lost itself in responding to the fans.
Yeah.
Like, what, reading too much Reddit and worrying too much about that rather than about just the craft of storytelling. Yeah. And so I think that, I think Star Wars has this really awkward relationship with that meta layer. And I think there are insufficient people involved, apparently, who see that as an issue.
Yeah.
That at the end of the day, these are movies, they're acts of cinema. Yes, there's supporting material and toys and comics and games and stuff.
Yeah.
But the films are films.
Yeah.
You know, I found out like about half an hour ago that Palpatine's message broadcast across the cosmos in our world was only broadcast in Fortnite. And that kind of tells you everything.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a multimedia, it's not a film, it's a multimedia event. And the previous example of this was like the prequels really, and it's been tried before with things like Shadow of the Empire, but it's just, I think what surprised me and what surprises me is I was expecting big retcons.
Mm.
I was expecting Rey as a clone of Palpatine personally, but you know, that stuff. I was expecting JJ to be able to not be able to resist unfolding his mystery box.
Yeah.
But I was expecting this stuff to take place within like a really polished, competent action adventure film that would be fine.
Yeah.
And that, because I, you know, really, Disney don't seem capable, like they don't tend to put out things that are just folly.
Yeah.
And this, I think, felt like
we'd lose the ambition, but we'd have a great rollicking time.
Yeah. I would go out thinking, well, you know, I wish they'd be more ambitious with that plot point.
Yeah.
But you know, it all landed. But even like, you know, the space battle didn't really work because it's choppy and kind of all over the place, and you can't tell how many people there are, or who they are, or where they are, or what's going on, or why it's important that they're dying. You know, they go in with about 17 ships and they lose about 30.
Yeah.
And then the reinforcements show up. Like, it's absolutely all over the place. Palpatine does a big blue sky beam because it's an action adventure movie from this century.
Yeah. After being on his weird pinata stick.
You know, they set up this moment where Kylo, Ben and Rey are going to fight together, but then they don't.
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, I mean, this is to say nothing of, I think, the movie's central arc, which is the, you know, Ben-demption stuff, which is so mishandled as to be almost, like, it's funny that we've talked about the film for half an hour now and just passed over what is really its thrust.
But it's not because it doesn't, because at no point, you don't get to watch why that journey would happen or why it would make sense. Like, the fact that we had one of our, you know, this is an example, Pat did a long Star Wars chats afterwards. We didn't even mention Harrison Ford was in the film until like 3 hours, until 3 a.m., whatever, no, it wasn't 3 a.m., 6 a.m., whatever, because we just weren't interested. It doesn't, none of the, like, there's no emotional stakes to it because you can't follow through anyone's thoughts. And I think you were talking there about, the metatextual kind of weight of Star Wars. And I do think, we talked about this a little yesterday, there is, I feel like, and again, Last Jedi, but Last Jedi took that head on and it acknowledged that Star Wars is a weird cultural property. It exists in a weird cultural space where when those first films came out, they invented something. They both invented a world that now has become like a cultural shorthand for a lot of people. They also invented a type of movie making. Like, so much was so new. And after that, it's expanded into, you know, like, industrially Hollywood has changed a lot, but also, and these kind of bigger franchises, all this stuff has changed. And the world in its weirder ways has expanded and grown into different pop cultural forms. What Last Jedi afforded was the, I kind of feel like Last Jedi acknowledged the problem of being in a holding pattern with when you have the movies that when they are put in this format of this is an episode, this is one of, this is like a big Star Wars film, it will get a billion eyes on it. And it will, to expecting a certain kind of story, in a certain kind of way. And And there's the tension that it's kind of running out of some ideas. We're kind of running out of ideas with that for these big stories, not for like the wider world of Star Wars. And it took that and it made it a thematic concern of the film. And I think it took the bullet in a way of being a metatextual film about Star Wars and turning it into something that actually had genuine character stakes and genuine kind of universe ideas about, you know, again, not the most sophisticated ideas, but why is war constant? What is it? Does it mean to be at peace with either yourself, you know, the world, whatever, like, It kind of took that bullet and took the risk of doing that through characters that are beloved in the world of the film, but also beloved in the world of like cinema and pop culture to free you of it. And so it's really just kind of nothingy to take that bullet there because we had the potential of Star Wars films being a new exciting form again. And they don't have to be. Like, honestly, maybe that time has maybe passed. Yeah. And Star Wars can be a sandbox we play in lots of different ways, and that's fine. But I do think what The Last Jedi attempted to do was recognize where blow up the big star, steal the plans, do the thing, quip, fly around in the next wing. That's not going to feed you forever. Mm-hmm. It's not going to feed you forever. And if you are ambitious about what these films can do, you like snap people out of it and break out. And I think that Last Jedi attempted to do that and then returned. This went straight back to like, that's the only thing that matters. Don't worry.
I think there's two interesting things I would draw from that. One is, I think almost the entire film's internal rot is encapsulated in the scene on Octo with Luke.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the first Rey burns Kylo Ren's ship and throws away her lightsaber, or Anakin's lightsaber. Luke's Force Ghost catches it and says, that's no way to treat a lightsaber, which is in a moment, a complete repudiation of the first thing Rian Johnson does with Luke in The Last Jedi, throwing his lightsaber away. Yeah. And it also reveals that J.J. Abrams may not have seen Return of the Jedi, where Luke's defining heroic act is throwing away his lightsaber. Yeah. This is a motif in the series. Yeah. It's not a mistake.
Yeah.
And Luke just sort of brushes it off like, I was wrong about everything I said in the last film, by the way.
And also the way I said it, I'm going to talk in a much more like clunky way, and we're not going to have any of the poetry.
In a clunky way. And that sequence ends with Luke lifting his X-wing out of the water, like in Empire Strikes Back, remember? Yeah. And grinning broadly because he's Yoda now, I guess. And it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
And it's sort of ignorant of the themes and it's not sufficiently set up, and it's just sort of, but it's smiling to you. He's smiling to you, the audience.
Yeah. Don't worry, you get Mark Hamill back again.
Yeah. Look, here
don't
I
worry,
am.
Don't worry about the sacrifice. Don't worry about what it was to at no point could this film sustain the even gentle filmmaking risk of Luke wasn't really there on Crait, right? The way that scene is composed on Crait, where you get a fucking stunning action sequence, but also you get that reveal of
a force trick.
Which is also to do with like, you know, not having to be the kind of hero going out with a laser sword, you know, and trying to like go beyond all this stuff that was like, again, like thematically resonant, and you still got a much more thoughtful connection with him and Leia, all this stuff. That gambit of the audience won't immediately know what's going on could never be played in this film, where the audience has to constantly know what's going on, to the point where, as you say, when the audience desperately knows what's going on, they still have to be like, ooh, like it's just really, it's very unambitious.
One thing I think is sort of interesting and almost a silver lining is the other flip side to this is one thing that had given me quite a lot of hope for this film was The Mandalorian, which I appreciate you haven't seen and I haven't seen because I live in the United Kingdom where it's impossible for me
absolutely
to see.
Absolutely illegal.
But I've heard.
From the dark web.
I've heard things about it. I can imagine things about
you've
it.
You've imagined an Avi file on a USB stick.
Well, let's not go that far. I can imagine that it is its own thing. It's very much its own thing. Very different identity. It takes that universe and does something completely different directorially.
Yeah.
In terms of its aesthetic, pacing, scope, kind of style of writing, style of film. And that is the best thing about this current era of Star Wars, is that different people get given it to play with and they can really get into the bones of it and change some fairly fundamental things. And what that does, I think, is it removes any excuse that J.J. Abrams might have.
Yeah.
Because while the whole film feels very much designed by committee and like a response to fan stuff, and maybe it was, maybe there were focus tests and all of this weight of industry on top of this film, but it didn't really break the previous two. And that stuff didn't break, maybe it broke Solo, but it didn't, you know, Solo and Rogue One both had the production difficulties, but they emerged through it as, I think, watchable films. This, I feel like this really has to come down to, like, his failings as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
Like, either not to fight hard enough for this to be better or or to this, for this, as you said right at the beginning of this conversation, for this to be the film that he wanted to make.
Yeah.
And to this to be the true expression of his idea of what this is, which is this sort of breathless series of action sequences with no stakes.
Yeah.
You know, characters reduced to quips, characters arcs that don't really go, you know, maybe to wrap up my own feelings on it from that point of view, I've been thinking all day about like how unsatisfying that ending is, how unearned the Rey Skywalker thing feels, how sad I end it with Finn, for example, who just sort of vanishes towards the end of the film in the big hugging sequence.
Yeah.
You know, Chewie gets his medal, which is only a meta joke about him not getting a medal at the end of A New Hope. Lando's gained a daughter or a girlfriend. It's eerily hard to tell.
A hornier ending than we fear from cats.
Yeah, it is a... It is a strangely horny film, I will give it that. But not really.
Yeah.
You know, Ben gets one little smooch and then he turns into a pile of clothes.
Yeah.
Fuck. I mean, that alone, that is fucking shit. There is no, I mean, and I say that not lightly. There is no reason for Ben Skywalker to die at the end of this film. In fact,
I think maybe just that J.J. Abrams, again, sorry, I keep saying J.J. Abrams, because literally nothing has stuck. I think it's an attempt to make this a trilogy about something, which is, if you end that, which I know nothing's really ended, whatever, but like, you end that and then it becomes a trilogy about Ben Solo in some way.
I don't think that's true.
But of course it's not, but like but I think he can justify it to himself that way. Maybe, like,
but I think that's...
Everyone else comes back from the dead. Force go, the dead speak is the first line of the fucking film. Like everything else comes back, like, Let's pretend this was a film about his arc. It's not really, obviously, but like, let's make this one thing stick.
The thing is, for me, making it stick by having the character die is the easiest form of that.
I must think it's good.
Like, you know, and I think actually, I don't want to go on this point too much, but I think it's actively harmful to the story that his redemption is only complete if he dies.
Yeah.
I think that actively undoes the meaning of those moments in other films. In fact, I think the death that his is most like is Padme's.
Yeah.
Right? Which is like, we've run out of things for you in this story.
Yeah.
So, Uba.
Yeah.
You've died of plot.
Yeah.
Like,
it's too messy to try and actually do redemption, so let's just die.
Right. There's a version of this where he and Rey are in the farmstead on Tatooine at the end.
Yeah.
You know, like, not able to be part of the resistance or the world that exists after their victory because of her history.
Yeah.
Her family.
Yeah.
And his decisions. You know, there's a version of this where they have, you know, their lives are in hermitage, essentially, because of the weight of history that they have carried. But they carry it off the screen at the end. You know what I mean? Together. Yeah. And that's the redemption. That's the hope, is that people can redeem each other.
Yeah.
But her relationship with being a Palpatine is so underexplored, and it comes down to "all the Jedi are in me," which might be one of the worst lines in the history of the franchise.
Yeah.
Positives? I was going to say positives. I would say
some nice production design.
Good. It's nice production design. Looks nice in many parts. Holy shit! Adam Driver is a very hardworking man.
Yeah, he is a hardworking man.
He run, he jump, he sweat, he cry.
He does a costume change and wears a sweater at one point. I find a lot of the cast really charismatic. And like, I enjoyed Kerry Russell in this movie, like, for the 5 minutes she's in it. Like,
she was
I thought she was good. She nailed like Star Wars affect really well. I enjoyed Kerry Russell. I'm curious about, I know this is like the classic prequel line, but I think there's probably, as much as it's very, very long, I think there's probably a lot that kids will enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about being more ambitious about Star Wars is that kids can also learn. Like, I used the analogy last night of, you know, at the moment, His Dark Materials is on as an adaptation on TV. And in that, there's the faith that kids can have a complex metaphysical, like, understanding of what dust symbolizes, and also not just for the audience, but for all the individual characters, that this thing is like the magic make fantasy work powder, but it is also a representation of sin, it's a representation of individuality. Like, different people have different symbolic and thematic relationships to these things, so the characters do different things for different reasons. Like, you can do that in kids' entertainment, and the Force can work that way. All these things can work better. But I do think, like, it probably, it's really scaled down its ambition from that kind of thing to, like, whiz-bang, fly around, pals, happy time. But, like, I think it probably will work for a lot of people in those ways, and at least in those terms, like, I think, like, kids will probably still have a nice time with it.
Yeah.
That's such a damning effect.
I worry about that, because I think kids can handle, as you just said, yeah. kids can handle more sophisticated entertainment than this.
Absolutely.
On the other side, one thing I would be wary of, particularly if you're a parent, you're thinking about taking kids to this.
Yeah.
I think it's actually quite a cruel and confusing film at times.
Mm.
I think you would have to be prepared
yeah.
for kids thinking that Chewie has just died
yeah.
and being confused when he hasn't, because yeah. that is hand-waved so brutally.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you have to be prepared for C-3PO to say something tear-jerky, like, I'm saying goodbye to my friends,
yeah.
and for that to then get yanked back the other direction. Like, I think films almost owe kids sad moments sometimes, but they can't be cruel.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
you have to be ready for kids having to look at Rey being dead
yeah.
with her cold, glassy eyes yeah. staring back at you.
Yeah.
And the grief that can suddenly cause, only for that to be undone.
Yeah.
And then for Kylo Ren, who's a very popular character, to be dead.
Yeah.
And legit dead.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. Like, there's so many little moments of whiplash in it that actually that's the thing I would worry about with kids in the film.
That's fair.
Like, you know, even compared to something like Vader's death, Vader's also popular with kids.
Yeah.
But it's a big moment that it's built to throughout the whole film is about it. I'd say positives were, I think, Adam Driver specifically as a performance. I think that there are jokes that certainly work.
Yeah.
There are fun puppets and bits of
stuff.
I love
the little droid fixing guy. That was one of the few times I was having like a fun Star Wars-y
fucking lad gremlin, whatever he is. Yeah. Takeaways. So let's wrap this up with just what it mean for now, Star Wars, to you.
This is an interesting question. Is it an interesting question? I'm going to... Sorry.
That's a good question.
No, I was asking myself, is my answer interesting to other people? Honestly, I've noticed... Chris and I have had... I've bored Chris to death with 1,000 conversations about being at best suspicious, at worst sick of kind of corporate art and how much space, even franchises I've always enjoyed, take up, you know, and like the dominance of Marvel movies, the dominance of Disney, and how difficult it is to decouple that like entertainment monopoly with some really sinister media monopolies, and how my personal taste for this kind of stuff is changing. And Star Wars sits interesting. Well, I mean, I always like comic books as well. I still enjoy Marvel movies. Star Wars, I'm so fond of, and it's meant so much to me in my childhood, and like that I still have space in my heart for that to be the big bombastic thing every couple of years. I still have a lot of like space for that. But with this being kind of underwhelming, I'm left with this kind of feeling of, I guess I don't care about this so much right now anymore. Mm-hmm. Not, I mean, obviously the fact that we're still talking about it, the fact that I apparently can't go 4 seconds without praising The Last Jedi, I still really like, I'm still going to watch the originals a lot. I'm still going to enjoy imagining stuff in this world. I'm still going to enjoy your enjoyment of it. And like, that's why we did this weird bookend of framing it in terms of our relationship, because it has been a funny 5 years to the last few times, you know, get on massive plane rides, I don't know how planes work, to come back and watch these with you, and it'd be a kind of act of like communion with our childhood and our, like, you know, all that stuff. If this had been really good, you know, it would have been a like, okay, you know what? Sometimes those big machines can pull it off. And this is an interesting way to tell stories. There's an odd amount of relief. Like, maybe I do kind of just direct my attention elsewhere for a while, because it hasn't given me that much. And again, not in a like, oh, I'm brutally disappointed, but it is that kind of like...
Time to move on.
Yeah. Not from like our friendship. And like, again, if they make another one, I want to be seeing it with you at midnight. And it is like a nice bookend. The experience of watching it with you and having another one of these weird conversations is a nice bookend to... 5 years of like dreaming about the Star guys. Like, it does feel like, okay. Like,
I think, yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I think for me, bookend is a good way of putting it. I I put together, I was lying awake this morning, and I put together my ordering of the, people on Twitter have been ordering the films in the run up to this, and I didn't. And I realized that I think this is at the bottom. I think only Attack of the Clones is worse. And I know that's going to be a wild, hot, that's a spicy one, I think. I genuinely think, I was thinking of it in terms of like, if I was to sit someone down and show them a movie that I cared about, I would be closer to showing them Phantom Menace or Revenge of the Sith before this, because for their vast flaws, they are at least the products of a single vision, even if
I disagree with it.
I don't want to like, get lost in that too much. The reason I bring it up, and I appreciate this, people disagree with me, I think a second viewing of this may push it out of the prequel territory. Yeah. I think it is as bad as them.
Yeah.
And I think good actors doing their fucking best and good special effects shouldn't detract from its failings as a piece of cinema. And for me, it's almost, I said on the walk down to the cinema, I would like a film, one thing I was expecting was more prequel stuff in there, really. But you know what I mean? I wanted a film that sort of helped me make peace with the prequels after all these years. Yeah. And in a way it has.
Yeah.
Because now Star Wars is bookended by failure.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a mean way. It's, I mean, it sounds mean, but like, it's like, okay, it starts off super rough.
Yeah.
And it ends super rough. And in the middle, as there's always been, there's this space you negotiate where you find the essence of the thing you love, which is the original trilogy, which I would note still hasn't had a bad film, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where most of my imaginative investment is.
Yeah.
And so it's this little bubble with the weird stuff at the fringe, which is not so different to being a fan of a dozen other things.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, whether it's the part of it that you care about, whether that's your favorite Doctor if you're a Doctor Who fan, or it's your favorite season of Star Trek if that's your series of Star Trek if that's your thing.
Yeah.
You know I can chart out my course and say mine is this. If anything, it's maybe slightly fond. This ending is maybe slightly fonder of the prequels.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Like I'm not my interest in this is not wholly diminished. I feel like to some extent I can move on from it as well.
Yeah.
It's over. The anxiety of people are going to make new ones of these within this main canon.
Yeah.
Is done.
Yeah.
And so it can just move forward now. It can be whatever part of my life I want it to be.
Yeah.
And there are no more, for now, there are no more things to get wrong.
You know?
And that is a strange kind of piece. And this is when I vanish and turn into clothes.
Yeah, but like in like a nice thoughtful way, looking at an actually earned double sunset as your cloak flashes away in a genuinely nicely composed shot with not overblown music.
Ah, man. That's, I think, all I have to say about the doings of the Starmen. How about you?
McClunky. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we did this because apparently like more than one person actually listened to that last thing, which is very, very nice and kind. I hope this is some space to think through this funny movie. It has its moments of fun. I might watch it again. Yeah.
Cool. Thank you for listening, though.
Thank you for listening.
And goodbye.
Bye.